This week's episode is sponsored in part by our friends Desiree and Dave of HighGravityBrew.com. Take the pain out of propane and go electric with the extensive selection of High Gravity's Warthog controllers and systems and electric gear from other manufacturers, too. From 5 gallons to 2 barrels and from single vessel to 3 vessels, HighGravityBrew.com has you covered. And check out their awesome build-your-own beer page when you're looking for ingredients for your next brew. That's at family-owned and operated HighGravityBrew.com. That's HighGravityBrew.com. Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, July 2nd, 2020. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, homebrewer Nick Teer shares an experiment testing the effects of sending beer yeast into space. What happens when Saccharomyces gets celestial, or at least upper atmospheric? If you go to basicbrewing.com, you can find archives of our audio and video shows. And if you go to basicbrewingshop.com, you can find our DVDs, our brewer's logbooks, and other Basic Brewing gear. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Basic Brewing and find our show page on Facebook as well. We have a cool Basic Brewing app on iTunes and Amazon.com, and we're found all over the place where fine podcasts are served up. If you want to support us financially, check out patreon.com/basicbrewing, and many thanks to everybody who's helping out in that way. If you go to patreon.com/basicbrewing, you can see a long list of stuff that you can access if you sign up as a supporter. Well, like many of you, this week I opened my inbox to see a letter from Bob Pease, president and CEO of the Brewers Association, with the subject line, Difficult News. And it is. The letter reads, like most of you, the Brewers Association and the American Homebrewers Association have not been untouched by the current pandemic and economic crisis. With the cancellation of all of our 2020 events, including HomebrewCon, and the subsequent loss of nearly 70% of our annual revenue, we've had to make operational and staff reductions to right-size the organization and best position the association for success in the coming years. Bob continues, regrettably, Gary Glass, director of the AHA, was part of those reductions. We deeply appreciate the many contributions Gary made to AHA during his 20-year tenure and wish him success in his next chapter. Going forward, Brewers Association Vice President and Staff Development of Staff Development, Ryan Farrell, will lead the AHA alongside the day-to-day team of Associate Director Duncan Bryant, Zymerger Editor Dave Carpenter, Competition Manager John Moorhead, Project Coordinator Megan Wobst, and backed by the full support of the Brewers Association team and in close collaboration with the AHA Governing Committee. Bob says, while our staff is now leaner, our service and programs to you, our members, remain stronger than ever. Since 1978, the American Homebrewers Association has been empowering people to make the best beer in the world, and we will continue to be here for you with expert advice, medal-winning recipes, Zymergy magazine, more than 2,500 member deals nationwide, and much more. So, I was stunned, needless to say. For many years, Gary Glass has been a good friend of the show, and I've always been grateful for his contribution. It's always been fun to talk to him and very useful as well. The AHA and the BA are nonprofit organizations that rely on member support and events like HomebrewCon, like Bob said, to continue their work. But now, you know, the pandemic has wiped out those supporting events, and it's having dramatic effects. It's almost unimaginable to me. So I want to publicly say thank you to Gary for his support over the years, and I hope that he finds a rewarding position that takes advantage of his talents and furthers his career in new and exciting ways. I reached out to Gary personally, and he says he's going to take some time to do some outdoorsy stuff and some brewing before switching gears career-wise. So I hope he enjoys that. And here's to the next step, Gary, and I hope we get to chat again soon. How do you transition from that? Well, if I know me, clumsily, I expect. Every day I feel more and more lucky to have the weird job that I have, and it's all thanks to people who contribute content, like Nick Teer today, for example. Those of you who support us financially through the Patreon and such, and sponsors like our friends at Tavor. See? Clumsy, but here we are. You might not be able to go out as much as you're used to find craft beer, great craft beer, but our sponsors at Tavor are here to help with that. If you listen to the show, you already know about Tavor. It's a great way to select delicious craft beers that you may not be able to find in your area and have them delivered right to you. It's not a beer of the month club where somebody chooses the beer for you and you just kind of get this random box. You only pay for the beer that you choose over the course of the month. Signing up for Tavor is free. Just create an account at Tavor.com, T-A-V as in Victor, O-U-R.com, and download their iPhone or Android app, and you'll receive notifications for two new beers each day that are available for purchase with in-depth tasting notes from Philip at Tavor. This month, look for selections from Sun Lab, Cinderlands, White Lion, Green Bench, Hopfly, Sea Pine, and Weathered Souls. Now, you might know Weathered Souls is the brewery that started the Black is Beautiful Imperial Stout Project. And you probably heard of that. And Megan says that they're also sponsoring Fresh Fest, which is the nation's first craft beer festival to showcase black brewers. And they're sending out beer bundles in connection with that. So that's cool. If you're not interested in the beers that you see, no worries. Just skip the ones that you don't want. However, when you do see something that you do want, and you will, don't wait. Just click on it to add it to your crate. Your beer arrives fresh every few weeks, allowing you enough time to fill the box and pay the least shipping. Why don't you check it out? It doesn't cost anything to sign up, and there's no obligation to purchase anything. In fact, if I can ask you a favor, go to Tavor.com, T-A-V as in Victor, O-U-R.com, or download the app, and when you sign up, enter the promo code BASICBREWING, that's all one word, and you'll get $10 off your first shipment of $25 or more. Again, it's free to sign up, and there's no obligation to purchase. Sign up at Tavor.com or with the Tavor app and enter Basic Brewing as the promo code. Okay, this week is just pure fun. Is it as applicable as an experiment to test the effects on, say, Trub on the fermenter? Or chilling rates, or something like that? No. But doggone it, I want to know if yeast can survive a trip into space, and homebrewer Nick Teer is here to help. Nick Teer, welcome to Basic Brewing Radio.
Hi, James. It's great to be here.
Yeah, I feel like I should say welcome back, because you and I have been corresponding via email for years and years and years, I think, right?
Yeah, I'm going to have a little fanboy moment here. I've been a fan and a listener for a long time, since back 2010, I think, I picked it up. And so I've been listening and watching on the video side for a long time. And I've sent you my fair share of disaster stories over the years. So I've been on that show more than a few times.
Well, I don't know whether to say congratulations or I'm sorry for.
Yeah, well, fortunately, none of them involved glass or the hospital, but I definitely have had my fair shares of mishaps over the years.
I just got a comment on Facebook or something the other day, or on Twitter, saying, you know, somebody describing some kind of accident that they had, and, you know, I said, send it in for.
Yeah, right.
While it's fresh in your mind, send it in. Well, I appreciate your taking time and money and effort to send in this experiment. It's a fun one. You know, nowadays when everything is so crazy, it's fun to have something that's fun and crazy and not just like tragic and crazy. But
yes, no, I agree.
So talk about this experiment. What do we got going?
So, well, I'll just give a quick rundown and then we can talk about some of the specifics. But basically, the gist of it was that myself and my friend Dan Leopold and a contact of his, Norman Black, out in Colorado, we sent some yeast into space and we brewed some beer with it.
Now, that is definitely the elevator pitch of.
Yeah. that's the quick rundown.
Now, you're not Elon Musk. So
no.
Take it you didn't stick it, you know, in the glove compartment of a car and put it on top of a rocket. How did you get yeast into space?
That would have been cool to do, but yeah, no. I'm a high school teacher. I teach at Springford High School in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. My friend Dan is an earth science teacher, and he's also a NASA ambassador. So, he got the opportunity with an organization called the Edge of Space Missions out in Fort Collins, Colorado, to send some high school experiments into space on a high altitude hydrogen balloon. So, he and his students had to kind of develop the experiment, what they want to do. They had to engineer a box that could withstand the altitude and the trip back to Earth, and they put all these experiments in there. And one day at lunch, he was saying how they still had a little bit of room left in this box, and I said, "Well, how about I do something with beer in there?" And he said, "Well, I don't know. It's a high school experiment. I'm not sure how, the mission commander would feel about that." And kind of went back and forth for a couple of weeks. And finally, he said, he's like, "All right." He's like, we can send it up there." So I chose yeast because I thought it was small enough, met the weight requirement, and I thought that would be fun to you can go a bunch of different ways with that as far as beer.
Yeah,
I
and you
mo
don't necessarily have to make beer with yeast. You can make bread. So,
No, that's a good point. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So how high is this, just like a weather balloon kind of a thing?
Yeah, it's very similar. It's a hydrogen balloon, and it exited the Earth's atmosphere. It got up to 86,000 feet around there before it terminated and started falling again. And there's some awesome pictures from the GoPro on the experiment box that the students created that you can clearly see the Earth's curvature, the darkness of space, the atmosphere, the whole deal.
Oh wow.
So it did get up there outside the atmosphere.
You need to send me those so I can put them on social media. That'd be fun.
Absolutely. I'll send you a bunch of pictures because they are pretty cool.
So these are like the this is are these kind of like the experiments, that we've been seeing over the past few years where people put, Lego men or Whoppers or, whatever, on a little platform in front of a camera and let it go and have it go way up into space and take videos and all that kind of stuff. Is that the same kind of concept?
Yeah, same kind of concept. Yep. This particular one was a bunch of high schools that were involved in it from across the country, and they all got, if you've ever seen like an Omaha Steaks cooler, if you order Omaha Steaks, it comes in a little styrofoam cooler. It was basically about that size box, and all the high schools got to pick what they wanted to do. But yeah, it's a big hydrogen balloon with a long rope, and the boxes are tied to that, and then they had a GPS tracker attached to it. A little parachute from when it fell down, and then our particular box had a GoPro on it, so we could see actual video and pictures. And then yeah, they just blew up this massive, huge hydrogen balloon and literally let it go, and it just went up to the atmosphere. The wind carried it about 40 miles from where they started
Wow.
in Colorado, and then yeah, so it's pretty much the gist of the idea.
And they go up and they burst, right? I mean, they get so, this gas expands so much in that lack of atmosphere that the thing finally just basically pops, right?
Right, yeah, that's the idea. I found out actually through Dan that they can actually kind of determine the height that they wanted to go to by about how much gas they put into it. So they can kind of predetermine that we think this is going to go between 80 to 90,000 feet, or we want this to go higher, so we might get up, a little bit higher than that. But they can actually kind of fudge that. It's not perfect because we like to tease the physics teachers that everything they teach their students is wrong because there's no gravity in space. But so it's not perfect, but they can generally get pretty close to where they want to
Now
go.
when you see these like weather balloons launched, the envelope, there's plenty of room in there, and this just the top part, looks like it's got gas in it. But then I assume what, once it gets up into space, it just, it's got to be huge, this thing.
We couldn't see pictures of the actual balloon once it was in space, but like the video, I'll send you a video actually that Edge of Space Missions did of this particular mission, and you can see the balloon on its takeoff, and it's pretty big. I mean, it's big at the on Earth, And yeah, it expands as it gets up there. And that's actually was one of the challenges of this particular experiment when we were thinking about yeast, was that idea of, once you exit atmosphere, pressure and all those things sort of change. So it was kind of a challenge for me to figure out, well, what am I going to put in there so that it doesn't explode, or we actually get, something back on Earth that we could use.
Yeah, first of all, what kind of yeast did you put in there?
So we picked Nottingham yeast, the Danstar Nottingham, because it's vacuum sealed. So one of the things that Dan said, I wanted to send liquid yeast up there, and he said, no, we can't do that because it'll just expand and explode and get all over the experiments and ruin everything. So and even some of the other dried yeasts like SO5 and some of the fermentous yeasts, they had just enough air in there that he was concerned that that might also explode. So Lallemand, they really vacuum seal and dry their yeast very well, and that packet's hard when you get it. So we're pretty confident that that wasn't going to blow up when it got up there.
Now, remind me, does that yeast, does the Nottingham, is that a foil packet or is that paper? I don't remember.
I'm pretty sure it's a foil. It's really similar to like what you get in the fermentis, but it's a foil. But it's definitely vacuum sealed a lot stronger. Like that, you grab that, and there's no the package doesn't get, have any give to it at all. It's almost like when you freeze, what for like steaks and chicken and stuff. You put in
Right,
the like that. So.
like the sous vide thing, or like we've got a vacuum sealer for stuff. Now I can read people's minds in the future, and they're saying, "Well, Nick, it's already vacuum sealed. The yeast is already exposed to a vacuum inside that packet. What difference is it going to make to put it on a thing and take it to the edge of space where it's near vacuum up there? I mean, what are you testing for?"
Well, that's a great question. And so that was really what I was interested in is was this if we sent this yeast into space where we and we brewed a beer, would we get something different than if we just kept yeast here on Earth? So the experiment was designed to send the packet of Nottingham up into space and then keep control here on Earth and then brew beers with them to see if there was any perceptible difference. So I'm a member of Brewclear Homebrew Club here in near Collegeville, Pennsylvania, and there's some microbiologists in the club, and they were thinking that, there could be the possibility that radiation or pressure, or even temperature might play a role in maybe changing the yeast in some way, killing off some of the yeast, or I don't know, causing mutations when it fermented that might cause something different. I, on the other hand, didn't think there'd be any difference. For the exact reason that you mentioned, it's already dried, it's already freeze vacuumed, it's in a foil package. I'm like, it's not going to create anything different. So,
Do
but
you know
that
what the temperature was up there?
it got to about negative 40 Celsius. After that, once you get to a certain altitude, the instruments kind of act a little wacky, but that's the lowest temperature that it recorded. So, at least negative 40 Celsius.
Hey, you know what's fun? You know what Celsius negative four, or Fahrenheit negative 40 is in Celsius?
I think it's negative 40.
Yay.
That's where they converge finally, right? Yay, no, we don't have to look at the chart for all the international listeners.
Can just say
Unfortunately,
negative
all the
40.
what's interesting is that all of the instrumentation was in a metric. So I was looking at all this stuff and I had to do all sorts of calculations to figure out feet and speed and all that because it was all in kilometers and Celsius. And I'm like, I don't. What does this all mean? But anyway, but yeah, it got up to so 86,000 feet, negative 40, and zero pressure. So there were zero, we were zero on the Pascal scale
Wow.
for pressure up there.
Wow.
So it had definitely exited the atmosphere for sure.
And how long was it at that extreme, do you know?
About four or 5 minutes, which isn't terribly long, but. I mean, that's still 5 minutes in space without, at that temperature, everything freezes and, it's a complete different environment. So.
Yeah, I'd say if I were up at that level and wearing these clothes, I'd say that was 4 or 5 minutes is long enough.
That would definitely be long enough. Absolutely.
It's got a GPS tracker thing on there and a parachute, and so the balloon pops, and then a chase team goes running after it. Did it land anywhere interesting?
It landed in a very friendly farmer's field, about 5 feet away from a massive drainage ditch. So almost landed in water and missed
Oh.
it by just a few feet, which was great because now the boxes I think were waterproof, but we didn't really want to find out. So yeah. But yeah, it's cool, and you have to be very friendly too with these things could land anywhere and you don't know, and they could land somewhere that you can't get to and you might never get them back. So sometimes the missions go up and they don't get the payload back. So we were fortunate that we got it back.
Well, cool. So
Yeah.
now you got your Space East. Now what happens? What did you do to carry on the experiment?
So, we had these great plans. We sent Yeast to space. We had one of our a microbiologist friend of his that works at a very large pharmaceutical company freeze another packet from the same lot at negative 40, and then we kept another at control. And so we were going to do three different batches of beer and compare them all against each other. And then there was a pandemic. And we couldn't get all of the yeast back, and I didn't have access to big enough brewing equipment to do all of this, and there were a lot of different things that happened. So ultimately, we did get the yeast back from Colorado, but I was only able to use the space yeast in the control. So we kind of had to pare down the experiment just a little bit. But once I did get the yeast back, I made a 10-gallon batch of an English golden ale. From one of the recipes on in Zymergy on the BrewGuru app, actually, from the
Oh, there you go.
AHA.
Shameless plug.
There you go. So yeah, we made a 10-gallon batch of that. And I wanted to do something that was going to be fairly neutral because I wanted to showcase any differences in fermentation if there were going to be any. So not a lot of hops in it, but I know that you and Steve did a tasting, so I'll tell you after the tasting the hops I put in that, just
Ooh,
because I
that's
think that will be
interesting.
interesting based on some of your comments that I know you guys had, I think.
Yeah. So what were the were there any differences in the appearance of the fermentation or in the stats?
No, so the original gravity of the yeast is about, or of the brew is about 1038. Final gravity, both of them hit 1009, so they both came out about 3.8% alcohol. They both started fermenting about 12 to 18 hours after I pitched it. I didn't rehydrate it. I just threw it in because it was so low gravity. And they both finished up about 4.5 days later. They hit final gravity. And then I bottled them, which I reminded myself on that day why I love kegging so much, because didn't like bottling, but I had to do it. Because I had to send this beer all over the country, so bottled it up, just carbonated it with some corn sugar, and then we did some tastings,
Oh.
which were very, very interesting. That particular data,
Okay. Well, that sounds like a lead-in.
I think it does.
Yeah. So you sent us 2 bottles of each, and on one of the trips of mine to the homebrew store, stevesbrewshop.com, I dropped off Steve's bottles, and then we got he added another variable in the equation because he forgot to chill down his, but the so we got to taste them. He got to taste them, kind of room temperature, and I got to taste them chilled down. And so we got together over Skype, and I didn't tell him what what he was tasting or why or anything. So he was completely blind in the sensory evaluation. And so here's how that went. Well, Steve Wilkes, welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio.
Thanks, James. It's a pleasure to be back.
Now we're doing a mystery test here today. It's a mystery to you, at least. I know what the variable is that's different between these two beers that are in front of us, but you don't. And so, are you intimidated?
No, because I say it's cuckoo cuckoo, it's the walrus. No? Wrong mystery tour?
That's right. That's the magical. We're not rolling up for this one.
Oh, I thought we were doing a Beatles thing this week.
Well, we could. Well, we've got two plastic bottles in front of us, PET bottles, I'm assuming.
Okay.
One with a sticker that says Butler Pike Brewing Company, and one with no sticker. And so I'm opening this, the first one, the sticker one. The sticker one I'm calling number one. And I think you said that you forgot to chill these.
I did. Oh, they're fine. I did open it away from my desk, but yeah, it was fine.
So your tastes, you may be tasting some different stuff from what I'm tasting.
Maybe.
Now they're pouring the number two one. At least in my pores, has a little bit of a larger head on it. But that's not necessarily, you know, that may just be my margin of error there. They look similar. They look the same. It's kind of a, what would you call that, a dark straw color, maybe? Kind of Pilsner-esque?
Yeah, the Butler Pike beer looks to me about the same color as a Pilsner or Kell.
Huh.
It's kind of a Czech Pilsner.
Okay.
Looking beer to me.
Now I've got them side by side.
And then, and then the other one, the non-labeled beer, just looks like a Helles or, a Pils or an American Light Lager, for appearance-wise. And in my pour, that beer has a much more of a head and much more persistent head.
Yeah. Yeah, there seems to be a difference in the head. The first one, the head is dissipating a little more quickly than in the number two. There's kind of a citrusy nose.
Hmm.
The number one,
well,
I'm getting
number one.
I'm getting more of a nose on number one than number two.
Yeah, me too. Number one tastes really good to me. I get kind of almost like a cream ale. Kind of a cream ale corn kind of a thing. I don't mean corn in the bad way that we say corn, but kind of like a cream ale would taste.
Mm. The mouthfeel, the body is nice and creamy.
Mm-hmm.
Substantial mouthfeel. The hops, I'm assuming that's hops that I'm tasting. They're very citrusy or very fruity. There's a little bit of tropical fruit in there. Oh, I like that beer quite a bit.
Yeah, it's good. It's real good.
The second one.
Okay, now.
The non-label beer is, to me, the hops don't pop as much as on the label beer.
I agree with you.
So the non-label beer, the hops aren't as bright. They're kind of dull. It's sort of the same family of hop flavor, but the label beer, to me, the hops are nice and bright and fruity, the tropical fruit, citrusy kind of thing going on.
Yeah.
The second one
the
is just not as – it's kind of blah.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah. I think the one that has the nice head – has a nice grainy flavor. One that has not such a nice head does have some caramel notes that I like quite a bit.
Hmm.
A little, well, toastiness, like there's a biscuit malt maybe in there that's contributing and perhaps contributing to what I perceive as a more pretty good color difference.
Hmm.
So I see a fair, and I'm using real glass. It's not a lot of color difference. Now I'm going to hold them up in the light and look really closely.
No, I'm using the sort of opaque cups, but I don't see a whole lot of color difference. What I am seeing in the difference is the label beer has a head that dissipated more quickly. And it has a brighter flavor to me. The non-label beer had a longer head retention, But it's just kind of more dull on my palate.
Yes, I agree with that. That's pretty tough. I think I like the one with the no head retention.
Mm-hmm.
I think I like that one better.
I agree.
It has more going on in every direction, meaning I think that the hop character is more interesting, and I think the malt character is more interesting. And I actually get more of a malt character out of that beer than I do out of the one with the better head retention.
Right.
So that's about all I know to say about them. Having said that, even the one that I don't like as well, I don't know. It's just there's nothing wrong with it at all. And,
no.
You know, I'd certainly drink a pint of it, you know, if it were offered up and wouldn't complain a bit. But I do prefer the other beer.
Yeah, I'm not going to pour the rest of the bottle out for sure.
Right. Yeah. 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 I'll stick these in the fridge tonight and tomorrow when I'm like, oh, I wish I had a beer. I'll have one. So,
so do you have any wild guesses as to the difference between these two beers? Is it malt? Is it hops? Is it yeast? Is it water? Do you have any wild, and it would have to be a wild stab because you'll never guess, but I just want to see just how crazy your guess can be.
How crazy can my guess be? I truly have no idea whatsoever. Maybe the one that doesn't have as good a head retention was a decoction. Maybe.
That's too normal. Do you want me to tell you?
That's too normal?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So Nick is a high school teacher in Pennsylvania, and a friend of his gave him the opportunity to – he was using a high-altitude balloon to send experiments into space. And so Nick put some yeast with this balloon and sent it up into space. So one of these beers was made with space yeast, and the other is made with a control that stayed here on Earth.
That's I would give that to Brulosophy and just let them run with that all day long. You would never, ever, ever guess that.
You know,
that is the greatest experiment I've ever heard of.
Isn't that crazy?
That is insane.
So you think about it. When you send yeast into space, it's exposed to radiation and gamma rays and Sandra Bullock, and you know.
Yeah. That alone will turn you gray.
So Nick sent along an envelope. Oh, do you have any guesses as to which one is the space beer, the space yeast?
You know what? The non-head retention beer. I just think that the one that went into space we like best.
Yeah, I'm going to vote for that just for grins and giggles.
Yeah.
Okay, Nick says he has a note here along with this envelope. It says, here is the space beer. Two samples use the same yeast, or space yeast tour control. So he sent four bottles, obviously. I've included the answers in a sealed envelope that has been sitting on Funkin' Wagnall's porch in a mayonnaise jar since March. So Nick is right up our alley.
He is.
Okay, so here is the envelope. And I don't have to do fake Foley. Sis boom ba. What is the sound an exploding sheep makes? Oh! Butler Pike label, the label beer, the one that we liked?
Yeah.
Has been to space. Yeah. It's been to space.
It wins the Tang Award.
The It does have a certain tang to it.
It does. I love it.
Holy cow. We didn't do a triangle test, but I think the difference between these two beers was fairly substantial. And who knows?
They're quite different.
Who knows if it actually sending yeast to space actually made a difference or not? I don't know. But it's worth a shot. A space shot,
now,
if you will.
Oh, Lord, don't tell Elon Musk about this. Next thing he'll be opening a brewery somewhere in the stratosphere. God only knows.
Do you know how
high up the balloon went?
No, I don't know any of the details. The listeners,
I guess we'll find out.
You know, the listeners listening to this will have learned all the details, that's in the future.
I can't wait.
So this is not only does this have space, it has time travel.
So it proves that we're on the continuum.
That's right. Well, Steve.
Or the spectrum.
Steve.
Yes, sir.
Thank you for being open to experimentation and to opening your mind to the universe.
I've always been ready. My nickname is Zaphod Beeblebrox. So
don't panic.
Don't panic.
Always bring your towel.
Got my towel.
Thanks, Steve.
And thank you, James.
So there you go. I mean, Steve said he saw a color difference between the two, but I didn't so much detect that. But we thought that the two beers were different and that the space beer was the hop presence was kind of brighter and sort of juicier, and we preferred it. So what a fun experiment.
Yeah,
low stakes.
Some of Steve's comments were great. That was good. Especially when he found out what the experiment was. Because how would he have known? I mean, my goodness, out of all the things that you could do with an experiment in beer, that's probably the last thing you're thinking of is, space yeast.
Well, of course, if anybody on the planet would just, we call Steve Mr. Non Sequitur. And if anybody on the planet could just say it was in the space, it would be Steve. So I was hoping that would happen, but oh well.
But so your comments were really interesting. First of all, you guys did notice that there was a difference, and that was what I was going for. Would there be a difference? I had no idea if there would be, and if there was, what would it be? But I gave this tasting to some members of my homebrew club. We had 14 people come out to do a really interesting socially distanced tasting between the two beers. Now, they did know that one of the beers went to space and one of them didn't, but they didn't know which ones when I gave them the tasting.
Now, did you do the Brewlosophy style triangle test, or did you do the basic brewing lazy style of just side by side, one-on-one?
I went basic brewing side by side, one-on-one, simply because they already knew what the experiment was in a way, So I figured we can just do side by side. If it was completely blind, if they had no idea what it was, I might have gone triangle test. But for my purposes in citizen science, I just wanted to know, could you tell a difference?
And I forgot to mention in the recap from the thing that there was a difference in head retention as well. So the control had the better head retention, at least with us. I think, right?
Yeah, no, you're right. Yeah, that's right. And a couple of people in our tasting noticed that as well, that there was a difference in the head retention and that the control beer did have a better head on it. And how many is about 50, almost 60% of people also noticed a difference in aroma. Now, not everybody has the same sort of beer vocabulary as you and Steve do. But a lot of them did notice that the space beer was fruitier in that there was a difference in that aroma. So I thought that was really interesting.
So do you have stats on how many could tell a difference between the two and some hard data there, Mr. Teacher?
Yes, I do actually. I have it in a nice actual Google form here. So we had 14 tasters. And we asked them about appearance, aroma, And then taste was what we went, and then kind of overall impression. And, did you notice a difference? So let's see, we've got on appearance, 85% of people said they did not notice a difference in appearance. I think only 14% said that they noticed a difference, and that was mostly in the head, that mm-hmm. there was a difference in the head. In aroma, 60% noticed there was a difference in aroma. Ooh. Again, that the space beer was fruitier or more hop aroma. And then we got to taste, which is the one that I was most interested in. And 93% of people, 13 out of 14, said that they noticed a difference between the beers.
Wow.
Which I was blown away. I'm going to be honest. I didn't include myself in the data. But when I first tasted them, I was like, they're exactly the same. And then everybody else started showing up. They're like, wow, these are really different. I'm like, really? But yeah, 13 out of 14 people, and if we add you and Steve in there as well, then that would be, what, 15 out of 16.
Wow.
Said that there's definitely a difference. And when it came down to like what was different about it, a lot of people couldn't put their finger on it. The most common response that we got was that the space beer was a little harsher and the control was smoother.
Okay.
And that A was a bit more maybe bitter or along those lines. And then we had some beer judges show up. and they gave us some actual like real feedback on it. And those guys, they're national judges, so I really trust their judgment. They both agreed that A, the space beer, had some signs of a stress fermentation.
Huh.
So they thought that they picked up some little hints of fusel alcohols that kind of highlighted the hop bitterness and the hop aromas and things like that in the fermentation. And they really thought that that was probably due to some sort of stress fermentation on their part.
Huh.
Now, these guys are also microbiologists that work for a very large pharmaceutical company. So I'm like, all right, you guys spot on then, I guess. That's what it was. And then interesting enough, after I started tasting them, especially when they warmed up a little bit, I did start to taste some of those little fusel alcohols in the space sample.
Huh.
So
I still have the remainder of my bottles, in the resealable plastic bottles. So I'm going to have to go back, and now that you've influenced my palate, I'll have to go back and say, yeah, I taste that now too.
Right. But now, in fairness to you, I do have to point out that you did mention that the hop flavor and the hop character was a bit more fruitier and like juicier.
Mm-hmm.
In your tasting. And that's why I was saving with the hops I used. I used, now because of space beer, Challenger. Right? English Golden Ale. But I also, at Flameout, put in some Galaxy.
There you go.
And So that would account for those fruity flavors that, that you were picking up on in that. But what's interesting is that the beer judges didn't pick up on that. And in fact, one of them suggested maybe using New World hops to accentuate the juicier, hoppier flavor in more modern styles. And I just laughed. I said, well, I used Galaxy.
Well, you know.
Yeah, but I know. It's like, you have no idea what's in it when you're tasting it blind. So I just thought that was fun because I like to tease them every once in a while about, their judging.
You got to keep them humble, right?
Right.
Both beers I thought were good, or we both thought were good. We didn't obviously pick out any flaws, fermentation flaws, and then Steve was even drinking it warm. So, maybe we're just not that attuned to that, or maybe we were confusing some of those as hop components, or maybe those flaws were kind of bringing out some of the elements of the hops, There's all kinds of things that you can say to justify what what we were tasting and experiencing.
Right.
But what about preference? Have we talked about preference? Which
no,
people
we
like
didn't.
Better?
And this is where you and Steve differed a little bit. Most of the people preferred the control.
Huh.
I think out of the 15 tasters, out of the 14 tasters, 13 out of 14 that noticed a difference preferred the control over the space beer.
Hmm.
So that's where there's a little bit of difference. But
wow.
Again, Yeah, I mean, if you don't know, you know what I mean, you don't know what you're tasting, so they just went with what they thought. But they were picking up some sort of harshness in it, and that's what sort of led them to the other side of like, oh, well, the control is a little bit smoother. It doesn't have that sort of bitterness that they didn't like, so.
And it could be I mean, at another time of day, I might have preferred the other, or depending on what I'd had to eat that day, or there's all kinds of variables.
Well, and in fairness too, the difference between them was subtle. Like I said, when I tasted them, I didn't notice a difference. So, it could have been, like you said, very subtle thing, and someone might be, just more in tune to those flavors that they didn't like, or yeah, it could have been because it was a hot day and there's a thunderstorm coming, and they wanted to get out of there. I don't know, but yeah, it was interesting.
Now, it's a shame that you didn't get to brew the third batch with the frozen, the -40 frozen yeast, just to see if it was the temperature that caused the potential stressed yeast effect.
Yeah, and that's when we were talking about this in our homebrew club meeting after we saw all the results. That was one of the things that some of the guys were saying. Well, yeah, it would have been nice to have been able to rule out temperature and maybe focus on some of the other things. Even without that, though, a lot of the guys that are really schooled on microbiology were thinking that it was more if there was a difference in cell count or there was a difference in fermentation. That it was most likely caused by gamma rays outside the Earth's atmosphere. That radiation in some way may have either killed enough yeast to make it a stress fermentation or something. I mean, I don't know, mutations or something along those lines. Again, we don't know because I didn't do a cell count on the different packets of yeast, and I didn't take any samples during fermentation to test anything like that. But that was sort of the best guess. But it
Just
would have been fun to out to rule out temperature for sure.
don't make this yeast angry. That's all. You'll
Right,
get a green
right.
beer. Make it angry around St. Patrick's Day, you'll get a green beer.
Yeah.
That's an obscure reference. Now, I think I did mention gamma rays, didn't I? In the tasting thing, that and Sandra Bullock,
You
but.
did, yeah. No, that's right. Yeah, you did. That was right. So yeah, you were spot on there with what sort of the thinking is at this point. And their argument is that that yeast was basically freeze dried. It was dehydrated. There was no moisture in there. So they were thinking that even if you had frozen it, that probably wouldn't have made any difference because it's pretty resilient when it's in that state. So they were thinking that it was most likely radiation, but again, we can't prove that for sure.
Wow. Well, that's cool. Like Steve was, over the moon. He was even past the upper atmosphere over this experiment. It was a lot of fun, and especially to be such a surprise to him. So do you have a follow-up? Is there, what else are you going to do to yeast, the poor yeasties to see if they make a difference?
Well, we were thinking if we got access to the balloon again, or we were even talking with some of the guys that work at those pharmaceutical companies of maybe sponsoring a mission here in Pennsylvania with just our local high schools, that we might do some follow-ups with more controls like to rule out temperature or different strands of yeast, like maybe Kolsch yeast or something along those lines, just to kind of see is it, could we rule out maybe strain dependent or, temperature, those sorts of things as well. So we're talking about it maybe doing another, mission to space to get something a little bit bigger and maybe involve some more brewers so we can try to get some more beer out of it.
That would be
Which
cool.
would be cool. So yeah. And I've saved a lot of it. I have a bunch of jars of it, so I want to rebrew with it to see, second, third, fourth generation, does something happen with it, that makes it a little bit different. And we've actually also approached some local breweries about maybe wanting to use some of the yeast to do a
Oh,
commercial example of it.
why would you not if you're a commercial brewer?
I know, I know. There is a brewery that in well, I think Seattle, right? Didn't Wasn't there a brewery in Seattle that did something with space yeast before? But I'm not sure the details of that, but
I'll have to look that up. I hadn't.
yeah.
I was unaware, as I am
Yeah, I
of
think
most things nowadays.
it may have happened a few years ago, but I'm not sure. But yeah, we'll see. I don't know. Let's see if they're interested in it. That would be cool. To say, your space yeast is now in production. That'd be neat.
Well, Nick, this is thank you very, very much for including us. I hope that if you do follow-up experiments that you'll remember us. And I look forward to further correspondence, and may the rest of 2020 be disaster-free as far as on the brewing front is concerned.
Thanks very much, James. I appreciate you having me. It was great.
Well, thanks again to Nick and to Steve of stevesbrewshop.com. I got an email from Nick saying that he's got a spot on another mission in October. Next time, he's going to send three different yeast strains up. How cool is that? So, three times as much beer. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our mobile-friendly shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody supporting us through our Patreon page. Special goodies coming your way. Check that out at patreon.com/basicbrewing. That's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dotson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. In the meantime, stay well and stay tuned. So long.